a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. Episode 307. I've gotten used to saying three at this point. At first it was like, no, you're messing this up. You haven't done this 300 times. You've never done anything 300 times except bad things. This has been heartening. I have shown to myself that I can make a good habit. I'm very habit ridden. I'm good at habits. I'm just usually not good at good habits. So there you go. I can make a good habit, and you've helped me do that, dear listener. All right. So first show of Easter. So I'm gonna say Christos anesti, and you all have to say Alithos anesti, or Alithos anesti, which means Christ is risen, and you say, indeed, he is risen. It's all Greek-y stuff, you know, Greek. I don't know why I like that so much, but I do it every year. All right, so weekend recap, Easter weekend. It was kind of cool. I got like a little bit of a good break from everything. The shop was closed from Thursday through yesterday. And I got that the interview that you heard on 305 and 306. So all I had to do is kind of do a couple of intro segments. So it was kind of like a break from the show. I could kind of drop my guard and not have to think about the show for a little bit. I took yesterday off. It was Easter Monday. I just had a lot going on. Had to go to the doctor and stuff. I'll tell you about that in a second. So here we are back. Weekend recap. Easter weekend recap. Friday night. Good Friday. You know, Good Friday was brutal. I was just depressed and hopeless all day. But as my friend, the lovely and talented Dr. Megan Corrin said, it is Good Friday. It's just like, I was just telling her, I feel like I'm just like hopeless today. And she's like, well, it's Good Friday, you know, but I think you should have the most hope on Good Friday, because Good Friday is when it's like, if you owed all this money or you had like, you just jacked this situation up. Picture like, let's cast this in terms of like an 80s teenage movie. Your parents went out of town. They said, we trust you, don't have any parties or anything. So what do? You have a big party and you trash the house. Windows are broken. Everything's done. It was epic. There's a crusty old dean or a neighbor shaking their fists like, you darn kids. And you wake up hungover and the place is trashed. And then these people come over and they're like, we're going to completely just fix your house. And it's going to be like brand new. And it's loud and they're cleaning. That's basically Good Friday. It's the process of getting you out of what you got yourself into. So you should be like, yes, I'm getting out of it. I'm not getting what I deserve. But no, I was just rough on Good Friday. Do you ever have this feeling? And I talked to, seemed like it was a collective thing, man. Maybe, I don't know, is this what's going on in the news and everything? But I talked to two or three people that were experiencing the same thing. I have moments, and if they get extended into a long time, I would call that depression. But I have moments, maybe like a few hours or something, where I'm trying to figure out what to do about a situation. I've got a big high level decision about what to do with this or that, or whether to move in this direction with this work or whatever, you know, some kind of a big life decision that I'm working on. And that's what I was thinking about. I was trying to figure out what to do with this prototype for Calyx and how to move it forward. And, I get to the place sometimes where I can't picture any situation in which that draws me or makes me, I see myself in that situation and go, oh, I would be happy doing that. Oh, that's what, oh, that sounds amazing. I mean, I was running all these scenarios and going, yeah, I would wake up every day and want to jump off something. It's like, and at some point I learned to realize, oh, this isn't true feedback on any of these options. This is just where you're at right now. And it's a lack of perception, not a reflection of reality. And so I just close the notebook and go, today is not the day to discern this. You're in one of your funks, and I move on. So I was having that. I was sitting in the corner of a coffee house going, I don't like any of these options. I don't want to do this. That will make me miserable. I got better. I always do. So that was kind of the mode that I went in, and it was like, so that was early in the day, and I'm like, oh, it's Good Friday. I'm going to go to Good Friday service at 3:00. So I'm like, okay, let's do this. Let's go to church is what I need. Right. So I had been to, Easter, to the Thursday night, the, Mass of the Last Supper, which was amazing. It was just packed. It was just standing room only. Right. But the next day it was Friday and it was at 3:00 in the afternoon. I'm like, just the reality of being at work, some people not being able to get off and everything. I mean, it's not going to be that crowded. So I was kind of just, you know, doing my typical thing. I've been 10 to 15 minutes late for everything I've done in my entire life. And so I roll in, you know, a couple minutes late, 3:02, 3:03. And the place is like standing room only at Our Lady of Lourdes. Okay. Collective high five to Father Brian Larkin. He's just like that church has just exploded. And so I go in, I mean, there's literally no place to stand or anything. My foot is kind of hurting, so I don't want to stand. So I go in the back and there's a couple of these chairs, ironically, exactly like chairs I have in my house. And I go sit down in one of those and it's like back where all the kids are, the moms are taking all the kids and to when they're crying. So it's like Good Friday. I am in absolute, like, one of my depression funk modes. And I'm sitting here. I can't hear anything. I can't hear the service. I can't hear the homily hardly. I can't hear anything. And it's just like people bringing kids that are breaking down and human beings that are completely exasperated all around me. And so then it came time for the veneration of the cross. And it was just like forever. I mean, they had one station. I mean, note to self, next year, maybe have some separate stations. And it's like, it would be like 15 minutes. I got up, I went and looked, like not even a third of the people had got to go up yet. I go sit back down. Another kid breaks down I kind of needed to give my seat up for something. My foot was hurting. And I was just like, it just dawned on me. I am in the same place as I was when I was trying to discern this stuff and I was depressed and it was the wrong time. I'm just not going to sit here out of duty. It's not a holy day of obligation. This experience is moving me farther and farther away from the love of God. And you know what? I just left. I just left and I didn't finish up Mass on Good Friday. And if that makes me a bad Catholic, it probably does. I probably should have sat there and suffered. It's Good Friday. I suck at duty and guilt. I also suck at love. Maybe love could have pulled me through, but if you don't got love to pull you through, you need duty and guilt. And I suck at all three of those things. So I just bailed. I just went and prayed someplace else, tried to read a book, something. I was just having a crappy day on Good Friday, which ironically, depending on your theology, is either perfect day to have a crappy day or the worst day to have a crappy day. I think it's a little of both. Anyway, Saturday rolled around, Holy Saturday. Now, I was kind of still kind of in my funk. I did get a good night's sleep, and I was just like, okay, I kind of felt better a little bit. Got up, got some coffee. I did just kind of ran around and did some stuff and tried to read and tried to work on the stuff I couldn't get done the day before. But on Holy Saturday, I forgot to do something that I always do. And I always read Hans Urs von Balthasar and his Holy Saturday stuff. Now, here's a good example. So I say this sometimes and you wonder what I mean. I don't think that it's true. Von Balthasar, I think, if we understand him correctly, claims that Christ visited not Sheol, so to speak, or the place. He visited the hell of the damned. And he was experienced the same damnation that, you know, that sinners experience, and hell is in eternity. So he experienced eternal damnation for us, right? He went, you know, like it says in the creed, and he descended into hell. The third day he rose again from the dead. The church has always taught that that was kind of like the bosom of Abraham. You know, it was the place where he went and preached to Adam and Eve and all the patriarchs that had been waiting for him to come, you know? So Von Balthasar goes way farther on that. And it has just caused tons of problems in people, you know, not wanting to accept Von Balthasar in general because of that one position or whatever. And, but I read that every Holy Saturday because I think that sometimes to tell the truth, you have to go too far. I think we've grown numb to what Christ did on the cross. So if we really want to get the feeling of what Christ did on the cross, I look at that Holy Saturday theology as poetry. I don't look at it as it's not theology. It's not real. It didn't happen. But I read it. I don't think it's true, and I read it every Holy Saturday until this one. It's like five Holy Saturdays in a row, and I forgot to do it. So I'm going to go back and read Von Balthasar. All right, so we're to the end of my Holy Saturday. We're about to hit the Vigil Mass. I want to continue the weekend recap after the break, so I figure going to the Vigil Mass is a good time to break that as any. You're kind of getting the extended weekend recap. I mean, it was Easter weekend. If you don't get an extended weekend recap, you know, when do you get one? All right, so you're listening to The Counterposition. We'll be right back.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your tired and not having nearly enough coffee yet to have to be doing this show host. I had one cup of coffee this morning. Of course, it's not like super early or anything, but I slept kind of crappy, so I tried to sleep in. I was off from the day job today, and I just ran out of time. I got a meeting and I got to get the show done, and I don't have time to make more coffee, but I need more coffee. I should have been better with my time, which is pretty much the story of my life. All right. When last we left our hero, he had jacked up Friday night, Good Friday Mass, forgot to read Von Balthasar. Did get some of my discernment stuff I wanted to get done. And it's time for Vigil Mass. So we did Vigil Mass at like 8 o'clock or so. And I redeemed my Mass determination because I got there on time, but not early. I mean, I got there 30 minutes early, but it was still like crammed already. But you know, I love the Vigil Mass. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's long. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of readings. It just keeps going. It's a really long Mass. And, it takes some endurance. You know, but I was looking at my friend Mario Chavez. He's got kids there and stuff. There's people holding babies and stuff. I'm like, okay, look, I'm being kind of a baby. I'm a single guy. All I got to do is keep myself upright for the rest of this Mass. But it was so good, man. It was good. I love it. We did you go outside and they have the fire and all that, and you come in, you light these candles, and there's all this it's something this isn't on the outline, but something I notice is that, man, everyone loves fire. Why does everyone love fire? People love fire. It's like candles, a fireplace, a wood stove, a campfire. I mean, there's something about fire that in the dark, especially, that just draws us. And it's funny because you would think, oh, you know, actually firelight is a pretty insufficient light. I mean, it doesn't really go very far. And I mean, if you were in the woods and you were scared, a fire isn't what you want. You want a bunch of floodlights or something. But, you know, there's nothing comforting about just turning all the lights on all of a sudden, unless you're like in a haunted house and, you know, there's scary things in the dark or something. I don't know. It's like you want fire. We want in everyone, especially, you know, every guy. I don't know about you, but I'm a guy. And there's in every guy, there's a little, they're about 20%, 10% to 50, 60% of every guy, you know, is a 14-year-old boy still. And we love burning crap. We just love setting things on fire. If they would blow up, that would be even better. But we just love, there's a little pyro in all of us, man. We just love to just, we're just like, oh, we get to light the candles again. Yeah, this is awesome. I have fire in my head. It's like this little candle, but it's like, I got fire. I don't know. We love fire. I thought about that during the mass. Our friend Randy was coming into the church. Man, I tell you what, her and shout out to Randy, Pickett. I shouldn't have messed up her last name. So she came into the church at that church, and I had forgotten. I plan on going to California, and so I had forgotten that a good friend of mine was coming in the church. I should have went to his church and saw him come in, but I was just kind of on autopilot and totally blanked it, like I do. And so big shout out to Adam and Brittany Beach, man. My friends Adam and Brittany came into the church over the weekend, and I could not be happier to have that brother in full communion with me, man. I love that guy so much, and they're such amazing people. He and I are collaborating on some stuff for Calix here in Denver. And man, when I grow up, I want to be Adam Beach. I love that guy. Anyway, so big shout out to Adam and Brittany for coming into the church. And I tell you what, all three of those people came out of what I think it's called Eastern College. It's a Protestant liberal arts college out back east. And then Andrew Beach came in last year, I think, his little brother. It's like there's something about that classical program at that Protestant school that likes to crank out Catholics. So I don't know what you guys are doing out there, but well done. Keep doing it. The vigil, I love watching people come into the church. It was crowded and everything. At least I had a place to sit. And it was a long mass, and I was tired, and my foot still hurt. But I love watching people come into the church. It was just like, it was such a joy. It was a joy to be endured, but it was a joy. I just watching all these people come up and be baptized, and then watching all these people line up, other people that had already been baptized now get confirmed, and then seeing all these people going and receiving the Eucharist for the first time. Man, I just love watching people come into the church, and especially at a church like Lourdes, because depending on whose numbers you believe, a lot of times people come in, they go through RCIA, they come in, and it doesn't stick. But man, at a place like Our Lady of Lourdes, I guarantee you it's going to stick, you know? So, you know, and it's funny, speaking of Our Lady of Lourdes and just the possibilities of what happens when you really start preaching the gospel in a beautiful, living it kind of way in a parish, and the power of a strong priest like Father Brian Larkin that just preaches the gospel unashamedly. A couple years ago, I was talking to Ned Golish outside, and he was saying, yeah, it's 2 years ago tonight is when I met you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. We met downstairs. And I was remembering this church was, I don't know, half full. It's like on that Easter vigil just 2 years ago. And now it was like standing room only, people outside and stuff, in 2 years on the Easter vigil. So I don't know. That did my heart good. That did my heart good. So, went home, nobody was up or around. So sat on the front porch, had a sip of whiskey to celebrate Easter, went to bed. And then, so I got up Sunday morning, for Easter Sunday, And so, as I said before, I was going to go to California. I a lot of times I go to California. That didn't work out this year. So if I'm in town, I go to Mark Giesecek's house because he has this big traditional Polish feast. And, oh, galumpki. I love me some galumpki. Like these cabbage rolls, or like stuffed cabbage rolls with the tomato stuff. And so much good traditional stuff. They got the little, the butter that looks like a lamb. There's all this traditional stuff from a Polish feast. But they just moved into a new house. And his wife's pregnant, and they just moved into a new house. And it's like, we're just not going to have the big thing this year. I'm like, okay, no big deal. I got an open invitation to go to the Stefanik household on pretty much any holiday. They're kind of my surrogate fam around here. But they were going back east. So I was like, well, what am I going to do? I kind of turned down a few invites. None of the family coughed up or anything. So I was like, well, okay, maybe I'm just going to hang out by myself. I'm like, you know, okay. I'm like, you know what? I would consider that an okay Easter. I live with a bunch of roommates. They're all going to be off doing stuff. I might just get up and just drink white wine and read books and make myself a delicious meal and sit around and watch Netflix and just enjoy the house to myself. But then I got a last minute invite from the lovely and talented Peter Zalaska. And Peter, who works over at Catholic News Agency, and we went to TAC together for about a year, I think. And I'm friends with his brother, Joe, and such a good dude. I love Peter. And he's marrying my friend Kathleen this summer, and you know, they invited me over. So his parents are going to be over. I know a bunch of his kids, but I've never met the parents. And so they invited me over for brunch, and I went, and it was spectacular. I tell you what, brunch. I'm just going to tell you just. I'm just going to just get an advertisement for brunch. Brunch is the best thing ever invented. And I'm going to disagree with Anthony Bourdain, because Anthony Bourdain hates brunch because he had to work a bunch of brunch shifts for a long time. I think brunch is the perfect meal because it's like two meals. Like, you get to eat breakfast and then you get to go eat. It's like three really, because you get to eat breakfast and then you get to eat, you know, dinner basically. And then you get to have dessert. And you can start it pretty early, but it's perfectly respectable to drink the entire time. I mean, that's kind of the perfect meal. I mean, it's amazing. I get to have bacon and eggs and cheese and hash browns and all that, and then turn right around and have like roasted meat and veggies and like mashed potatoes and stuff all at the same meal. And I did, and it was delicious. And drink wine. On top of all that, I had a beautiful Cote de Gascon, Mont Gravé, $9 at Divino if you're around Denver. Mont Gravé, Cote de Gascon, white, I think is delicious. I'm a fan. Had some Cote de Gascon, ate some piles of bacon and eggs and stuff. Oh, so good. So super big shout out, super thank you to Peter Zalasco for saving me from not having a lunch in community. And I had a Stefanik upgrade because Elizabeth is married to my friend Joe Zalasco, but she's Chris Stefanik's little sister, and obviously like the best Stefanik. I mean, she beats Chris up and down. I'm a crazy talented artist, painter, icon painter, beautiful, charming, intelligent. I mean, a total upgrade over that schlub, Chris. I mean, so I don't even care that you went back east, Chris. I don't even care that I didn't get to have Easter with you, because I got a Stefanik upgrade because I like Lizzie better. So they're meh. This weekend recap is just taking up the entire show. Good, because there's nothing but bad news in the news, and I got some news to comment on later. If I don't get to it, I will not be mad. All right, so you're listening to The Counterposition. Let's go to the break. More up my sleeve.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
People singing, please don't stop. stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to the Counter Position. I am your still improperly caffeinated host, Andrew Whaley. And we're moving on to Easter Sunday, part two, weekend recap edition of the Counter Position. Yeah, this is going to turn into a weekend recap show, I think. I mean, I'm going to get to the end, and I got a little riff I want to talk about with this bad news, but I'm not going to let the evil of the world invade and take over my show like I thought about doing. Got done with the big Zelasco brunch episode, shenanigans, and so I got a second invite, which worked out really well because it was for the afternoon and evening. So I went down to Casa Golish, which I think is in like Pueblo, Colorado or something. It's like way down there. It's like you just keep going south. I mean, technically you're still like in Denver County area somehow. I don't know how they live so far away. I tease Antoinette all the time about how far away she lives. It is really far south, but you're still like in the middle of the metro area. I didn't even know that like the neighborhoods went that far south. It's a part of Denver I just don't go to unless I'm going to their house. It's just like, you know, nice neighborhoods way south. So I went down to Casa Golish, and I love the Golishes. I'm a fan. Ned, her dad, is now officially my ophthalmologist, optician, whatever. He's an eye doctor. Went the other day, and so I got an announcement to make. I evidently am mature, quote unquote. And Ned's a listener. These are his words. I am, quote, mature, end quote, which is a nice way of saying I'm old. And how do I know that I'm old? Because I can no longer dodge it. I had to get bifocals. It's like they are making them as we speak, and I'm going to go pick them up. Progressive lenses, bifocals. My first pair, I am not happy about it whatsoever. Prepare like in the next couple weeks at some point, you're going to get a good solid segment about me bitching about trying to get used to bifocals. Antoinette, also known as Shiny, the Disney warrior princess, is his daughter, and the lovely and talented Colleen and Nakia and all the people. Ross wasn't there, but I love Ross too. All these amazing people who just kind of take me in all the time. I don't know what it is. This family, like, they just found me at the Augustine Institute behind the bar at some lecture, and for some reason, probably because I make good coffee, and they are holy people and want to help horrible people like me, they just kind of adopted me, and they've been the most affirming, most loving people ever. And then Antoinette hangs out in the shop all the time. You've heard her on the show. I've interviewed her on the show. There was a big Texan guy there too. I can't remember his name. You know, so he just wandered in off the street in cowboy boots, started making a fire. No, it was Blaine. I'm a giant fan of Blaine. And he pulled Blaine, you know, there's kind of a crunch moment, right? I mean, when you're at your girlfriend's house for Easter and they want a fire and the father lets you build the fire. I mean, that's crunch time right there, man. That's like, that's primal caveman stuff. Like, you got to knock that out of the park. I mean, if you can't provide warmth, if you can't provide fire that will keep the wolves at bay, you know, I mean, then you're I don't know, you know, you're kind of, you failed as a potential, you know, I mean, and I say, Blaine knocked it out of the park. A spectacular fire, which followed me all over the place, no matter where I sat. Smoke follows beauty. We all know that. I'm purdy. I had finished eating like an hour and a half before, like a lot at Zelasco brunch. And I went to it was kind of like, you know, like I was like a hobbit, you know, like there's breakfast and second breakfast and 11sies. So I had, breakfast. And then at the same meal, I had lunch. And now, then I kind of had dinner. And now I'm going to have like second dinner. So they had beautiful ham and all this yummy stuff. And so I'm like, oh, I'm not super stuffed. I'll eat again. Bad idea. I mean, I was just like, we went outside and we built a fire. Sarah, the quitter, Stacy was there too. And I was hurting for a while there. I was like, wow, I just should not have eaten more. I should have just got like a little taste of each thing. But I don't know how to get a little taste. I got a scoop. And then you took a scoop, so you kind of got to eat it, right? You know, and oh, it got out of hand. But we had a good time, was had by all. We almost watched The Lion King again, which is, this is the same household that we had Hakuna Matata, which, by the way, I listened to that episode again. I claim that the last three segments of that Hakuna Matata Lion King commentary episode is the best episode of The Counter Position, or at least I'm at my most brilliant in that episode. I was kind of on my game, and the weird version of, if I have a version of smart or insightful, it showed up on that particular episode. The rest of it's crap. I don't know why you listen, but that episode was good. That was a good episode. So anyway, massive shout out to Casa Golish and everyone there, and for loving me despite me and giving me a second place to stuff myself full of food. And so then, oh no, it's not over. I had to see Mark Giszczek on Easter, even though he didn't have the big Polish feast. So he's got this new house, and the kids were down, and his wife Colleen was off doing a gig. She's this amazing jazz singer, like, you know, she does like swing music and stuff and everything. She's gorgeous and amazing, and she was off doing some kind of amazing thing. And so I went over after he put the kids down, and I took a bottle of wine over, and we sat around his new house and drank a bottle of wine. Now, there's two things that I came away from drinking a bottle of wine with Mark. One of them is about the bottle of wine itself and some ideas that I have from that. And the first one is, so we were drinking wine for a while and talking about different things. And we, you know, and then I said, I looked at Mark. Mark knows me really well. He listens to me think out loud all day, every day when he comes to get coffee and hang out. And I was like, Mark, what should I do? And I was kind of going back to all these decisions I was trying to make that got me depressed on Good Friday, and that I finally got some insight on Saturday. And I just kind of wanted to get, I wanted to check my answer, so to speak. I kind of came to what I think I should do, in the direction I should go, what I should let go, what I should focus on, do all the above. And then I kind of went, look, man, you know me really well. What should I do? And we had a long conversation and argued about stuff a little bit and everything. And in the end, he ended up telling me basically the same thing that I came to. And it just dawned on me that something that I don't think we do often enough is really open ourselves up to be vulnerable with and listen to the people that know us well, especially the ones that are good listeners like Mark, because I talk a lot and Mark listens. Mark would talk more if I would let him. I let him talk more on our podcast. He's at my, than he would claim I do. Especially the most recent podcast on narrativity was pretty evenly matched. And that was a great show. He would say it's great, 'cause I let him talk more. But, Over the Counter podcast, that latest episode on narrativity was a really, really good episode. I think that's our best episode. So I think the Lion King episode is the best episode of The Counter Position. The brand newest episode of Over the Counter is the best episode of Over the Counter, I think. Which means I'm going downhill on this show, but we still haven't peaked yet on the other show. So anyway, so that was a beautiful experience. I love Mark and Colleen a lot, and I'm so glad they bought a new house, and they have so much more room, and there's so much potential in it. I just love seeing a family like that growing and he's like, you know, it's like the Schneers out in California, or the Fikes, or all of my friends that I have that are just like the Stefanics. I'm like, oh, you make good people, make more of them. I mean, I love all their kids. I just love the environment that they're making for their kids and the care with which they're raising them. And just, they're just good people making good people and raising good people. And I'm a fan. So that was good. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about, and it's probably going to have to get over into the final segment, and but this is an idea. It's not technically a recap. We're going to end the recap there, and we're going to move on to the conceptual four segment. Okay, so I'll set this up. While we were drinking was a Justin Cabernet Sauvignon. Justin is a winery in Paso Robles, California. And it's the Justin Isosceles, which is a really nice Meritage wine. A Meritage means, it is two or more of the grapes of Bordeaux, which are Cab Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Malbec, and Petit Verdot. So, I'll tell a good story about the Justin Isosceles and why Justin means a lot. This winery kind of means a lot to me. And so I saw a Justin Cab for a good price and I grabbed it. But they're in Paso Robles, California. And it's an area of California that's known for Zinfandel. It's really warm and they grow tons of Zinfandel there. Big kind of jammy, spicy, different kinds, but just very, very much a Zinfandel area. And the parts that are closer to the coast are cooler because of the climate tend to grow, Rhone varietals, you know, Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, stuff like that. But not Justin, they grow, Bordeaux varietals right here in the Paso. I want to talk about that and why that matters here in a second. All right, you're listening to The Counterposition.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we're talking about Justin, the winery in Paso Robles, California. They grow Bordeaux varietals and damn fine ones in a place where you don't think you could grow them. You know, they're not, it's not the place that's kind of perfect for them normally, that area. And so, so backing up, part of the reason why Justin has such for some reason, I just have a soft spot for that winery, partially because his name, I guess, same name as my best friend, Justin Schneer, drink. And, I used to be a wine steward at the ranch house in Ojai, California. And the ranch house had the Wine Spectator Grand Award for 17 years in a row. It's been kind of bought and ruined at this point, from what I understand. I haven't been back there, but they sold off most of the wine list, and it's a club promoter from LA bought it, and kind of, I hear it's just kind of not the same. But anyway, for 6 years off and on, I worked as a wine steward there, and I just learned so much about wine and about how to experience life. And shout out to Michael Denny, my chef sommelier, who was taught me everything I know about wine and exposed me to all kinds of beautiful wine. So my first night there, it's my first formal tasting. Aaron Lawson is tasting with us. Aaron Lawson is a super taster. Shout out to Aaron Lawson. And, he's tasting along. We're blind tasting. And he's like, yeah, this is definitely Bordeaux varietals, definitely New World. And I'm like, I'm writing notes, trying to figure out what he's talking about. And he's like, yeah, this is a Meritage wine. And they explained to me it's two or more of the grapes of Bordeaux, but made someplace else. Meritage rhymes with heritage. It's merit and heritage. It's a made-up word. Happened from a contest of Wine Spectator. And he's like, yeah, you know, it's Cab Franc heavy and we're going long tasting. And he's like, you know, it's got that herbaceous roadside weed kind of thing that you associate with the Central Coast, you know, kind of around Paso Robles. And I'm like, okay, I'm starting to think that this is kind of like flowery kind of poetry or something. You know, I drank a little bit of wine, but I was training on the job. I didn't really know what I was doing. So finally he ends up saying that this is a Cab Franc heavy Meritage wine from Paso Robles, California, and names the vintage. It's like a 97. It's a 97, I think. And so then they finally unveil it, and it's a Justin Isosceles, which is a Cab Franc heavy. At that year was a very Cab Franc heavy Meritage wine, Paso Robles, California. And I'm like, okay, boys, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. I thought this was the trick that they play on the new guy, you know, and now it turns out just he's that good. Now, later on, I could probably catch that Isosceles. At one point in my career, I could have caught that Isosceles blind and told you what it was, because it has a very particular taste and has a very particular climate. So the last thing I want to talk about is the concept of microclimates, right? And how that has a kind of a reverberation beyond into more than just wine. So speaking of the ranch house, here's a good example. Two examples from microclimates that I want to talk. So Justin is growing really beautiful Bordeaux grapes in a place but the way it lays and the way the coast is there and the way the shade is and what it is, they're growing really nice Bordeaux grapes in a place where it's not really known for Bordeaux grapes, you know? So the ranch house where I worked as a wine steward, Alan and Helen Hooker came to Ojai to listen to Jiddu Krishnamurti, who was this Eastern teacher that used to speak up in the oak groves. And they ended up founding this little restaurant called the Ranch House. So people came from all over the world, traveling from the East and all kinds of places, comes here, Jiddu Krishnamurti, and they were part of the following of Jiddu Krishnamurti. And they would always eat at the ranch house, and people would bring them plants. And a lot of times they bring them plants that just are not supposed to grow in the climate of Southern California. But over time, they just crammed so many plants into that space that weren't supposed to grow there that it became kind of its own little microclimate. And now a residential neighborhood over the years has grown up around it, but inside the walls of the ranch house, or at least at one point, I don't know if they've cared for it since they bought it, but there was a microclimate that stuff grew there that just shouldn't grow there. There was like 10 kinds of bamboo and all this stuff, rainport limes, all these things that are kind of from someplace else that maybe want a little more wetter tropical kind of a thing. They managed to create a climate where things that were out of place grew, right? Another example of that down the road is Ferndale Ranch. So Ferndale Ranch is the ranch that surrounds, and in the middle of Ferndale Ranch is Thomas Aquinas College. It's up on the 150 between Santa Paula and Ojai. It's where I went to college at. And there's an area of the campus that goes down to, if you go down beyond the ponds, there's these three man-made ponds that are like scaled down and they flow into each other and people swim in them and stuff. And if you go down a little farther, there's a place to have like an outdoor fire and some stuff. And a little farther down there, there's this area around this. It's just darker and darker and darker because of all the shade cover. And this water comes from down out of the mountains in Santa Paula Creek there. And there's a lot of sulfur in that water and stuff. There's a sulfur spring right there that stinks like rotten eggs and everything. But down there, there's like all these ferns growing. It's like cool. It could be burning hot on the campus and you go down below down there and it's like cool. And there's ferns and it's like, you feel like you're in the Pacific Northwest. It's like its own little, it's just a combination of things that came together to allow something to happen someplace that people would think that it couldn't happen. And I think that that is an image of the beauty and the primacy of the local, of a particular context. You know, think about like Columbia, Missouri, Columbia, Missouri. They call it the Berkeley of the Midwest. It's a full-on, fairly liberal Western college town, plopped down in the middle of redneck country, Missouri. And it's, I mean, once I finally moved out west and I was around actual Western college towns, it feels like that, but it's right in the middle of Missouri. You know, there's places like that, you know, there's incredible, like an Eastern Orthodox bookshop that is ecumenical in scope and one of the best bookshops in the country. One of my favorite places to go, Eighth Day Books, has the Eighth Day Institute next door. Shout out to Aaron. Just met him in Benedictine. How is that book in like Wichita? I mean, you could maybe picture it like up in Lincoln because there's so many Catholics there and all that stuff, or in maybe some town where there's like maybe a big Eastern seminary or something like that. But it's in Wichita. It's amazing. It's grown up there and it just works, right? There are places, there are small towns that can't, most small towns have a really hard time supporting a really progressive, really killer cutting edge third wave coffee bar. People want kind of second wave in small towns a lot of times. But there's places that are just a small town out of nowhere, and you find this thriving, amazing coffee house cranking out beautiful shah, beautiful baristas, and beautiful that are just going on and doing amazing things. And you're like, how did that happen there? How is that succeeding, right? So it's just, I guess the moral of the story is, if you try to plan enough stuff that doesn't fit someplace, sometimes it supports each other. Whether that's a neighborhood in a city. And, you know, we had a meeting last night with a bunch of people, been kind of talking about the Benedict option and talking about intentional Catholic community and creating a Catholic neighborhood or creating a Catholic village or something like that. And it's like, sometimes if you throw enough stuff on together, it'll create an environment that something that isn't supposed to be able to exist there can exist there, you know? And I think that's a microclimates and all that is a way to talk about that. All right. Finally, I want to talk about, I'm not going to get to, so a guy killed somebody on Facebook and I have a lot of thoughts about technology and all that, but I just ran out of time and I'm kind of glad because I haven't really fully formed what I think about all that. So finally, I want to talk about Mario Chavez from Vita Nova Spinal Care, my new chiropractor, been a friend for a long time, been trying to get me down there. I went down for x-rays and man, it was amazing. I went back for my first adjustment and he has you stand on two scales and tells you so you can see where you're kind of weighting yourself at. He showed me all my x-rays and like, see how this is twisted here and you're leaning here. This is causing this. And he showed me all the imbalances and everything. And he adjusts what's called your atlas, which is that top joint where your head attaches to your spine. And that's all he adjusts. He doesn't do all that cracking and popping and stuff. He adjusts this top link in the chain and then it works its way through the whole chain. And I knew that, but I was expecting him to like actually adjust that joint, like somehow pull on my head and pop it or something. And no, I mean, it was like he put me down in this, spent all this time getting me in this exact position on this table. And then it felt like he barely touched my skin. And then he had me go stand on the thing again. It was the same, put me back down, did it again. Just barely touched the skin with the outside of his hand in certain places with almost no pressure. And then I went and got back on the scales, and sure enough, I was equally balanced again. And I thought, okay, was that just like, whoa, really? Really? And then sure enough, man, throughout the day, especially in my neck, things just started loosening up and popping and changing. And every time I would turn my head, something would pop or everything. Things are like coming in place. So maybe that's the opposite of the microclimate. Maybe there's sometimes when you just got to fix one thing and then everything else will work its way out. So I think I'm going to continue going to Mario. So you'll be hearing health and chiropractic stories from me at some point. So, hey, we're out of time. That's episode 307. Thanks for coming out. All right, let's pull the plug. Top the cord. Another episode of The Counter Position. Christos Onesti.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.